Well, history is littered with great political comeback fighters. You think of Churchill, Menzies, De Gaulle, Nixon, John Howard here in Australia, Abe in Japan, Mahathir in Malaysia. Well, add Benjamin Netanyahu to the list. Written off time and again, and against all the odds, he's bounced back with tremendous force to win a fifth term as Israel's Prime Minister. Now, to hear more about Netanyahu's triumph and what it means for the Middle East, let's hear from one of Israel's most prominent commentators. Ehud Yari is an Israel-based fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He's author of, among other books, Toward Israeli-Palestinian Disengagement. Ehud, welcome to ABC Radio.
Thank you for having me.
How do you account for Netanyahu's victory?
Well, number one, he's a virtuoso when it comes to running election campaign. And he has managed the campaign alone, single-handed, with a bunch of 25-year-old kids who were doing the social media for him. But the main cause is probably the fact that a majority, if we want, of the Israeli voters feel that if Mr. Netanyahu has to have his day in court and be charged with corruption, breach of trust, etc., then let him do that and let's see what the decision of the court is. But in the meantime, according to the Israeli law, passed long before Mr. Netanyahu became prime minister, he's allowed to stay in office until convicted at the last instance of the Supreme Court.
Okay, now just to clarify all this, he's been accused of accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in gifts in exchange for favours, as well as cutting illicit deals with media publishers. Now, won't he have to deal with his unlikely indictment by this Attorney General in Israel on charges of bribery and fraud?
Yes, he has. There will be a hearing, which is the Israeli system. The lawyers of Mr. Netanyahu will have the option to present the case of the defense to the Attorney General. And then he has to make a decision on whether to press charges and exactly what charges.
Okay.
We have had cases before with politicians in which the hearing changed the decision of the Attorney General.
So he denies wrongdoing, but he may have to step down as he fights the charges. But could Netanyahu push legislation granting immunity to a sitting prime minister? That's conceivable, isn't it?
Oh, no, Tom. Netanyahu, according to the Israeli law, does not have to step down. And in fact, before forming his next government, the coalition government, he's going to secure the commitment of all his potential partners that the current law will be respected. That means that Bibi can stay as prime minister and at the same time face trial. This is the law. By the way, this law is exclusively for prime ministers. It doesn't apply to ministers, members of parliament, etc.
Okay, now back to Netanyahu's victory. Some say that his close relationship with President Trump helped. And if you think about, you know, Trump's call for a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem, U.S. recognition of Israeli sovereignty in the Golan Heights, the stoush with Syria, and the designation just last week of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terror organization. To what extent did that all of that help Netanyahu secure a fifth term?
Yeah, I think it does help Netanyahu that Israelis generally, including many of those Israelis who despise him and would like to see him gone, they all appreciate his qualities as an international statesman. And I would like to point out, if I may, that even more than Trump, it is his close relationship with Vladimir Putin that is helping him. Because he's proving to the Israelis that he is in a position to have the Israeli Air Force strike consistently against Iranian targets in Syria. And Mr. Putin does not do anything to stop it, although he has the Air Force and the air defense batteries underground in Syria.
Well, that is intriguing because Bibi Netanyahu has also reached out to many of the Sunni Arabs in the Gulf states and, of course, Egypt. And clearly that move is primarily motivated by a a joint fear of Iran. But you're saying that Netanyahu's close relationship with Putin also helps, even though Putin is supporting Iran.
Yes, but I think that what we see here is a balancing act played by Mr. Putin, in which he for over 3 years now, he allows, if you want, the Israeli Air Force to go after the Iranians in Syria, hundreds and hundreds of strikes. At the same time, he's using the Iranian militias in Syria in order to deal with the rebels there. So this is a sort of typical Putin game which is going on. You've mentioned the relations that Bibi has developed with the Sunni Arab states, mainly in the Gulf, mainly Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. This is, for many in Israel, this is a proof and evidence that his doctrine is working, and his doctrine is very simple. He says, since the Palestinians are not willing to have a deal with Israel for the foreseeable future, and that's the case, and this is accepted by the majority of Israelis, he says, let's develop now the relationship with the rest of the Arab world so that later on maybe the Palestinians will soften their position and a deal becomes possible. This works with Israeli public opinion.
My guest is Ahud Yari. He's a Middle East commentator for Israeli television for more than four decades. And we're talking about Bibi Netanyahu, who's scheduled to be Israel's longest serving leader. Back to Netanyahu, he's widely believed to be smug and vindictive. How do you account for his remarkable ability to overcome setbacks time and again?
I know Bibi well for many years. Politically, he's very, very agile, very creative and innovative. He is a master of tricks, including dirty tricks, which are not in the political book of Israeli politics. He's a guy who doesn't have close friends. He's a guy who doesn't have people whom he really trusts. But he's a guy who is trusted by many. So everybody knows that he's, in a way, a tricky Bibi. But people say, who else do we have? Do we have a real alternative to Bibi at the moment? The three ex-chiefs of staff with the new blue and white party managed to convince the Israeli electorate that they are not up to it. And this is a good part in the reason why Bibi won again, really against all odds.
Yes, and you say he's the master of dirty tricks, but Bibi's also the master of wrong-footing his opponents. If you think about the opposition Labour Party, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they've ruled Israel for most of its first three decades, yet Labour only won about 5% of the vote. How do you account for Labour's dramatic decline in Israel?
Well, Labour was decimated, was gradually destroyed by the Oslo Accords of 93. They have said to the Israeli public, we can have a deal with the Palestinians, we can make peace. Late Prime Minister Rabin, revered by everybody, and the late Shimon Peres, and the Israeli public by now is convinced that that was the wrong approach. So the Labour Party is paying the price. And what you have now in Israel is that even the people, those chiefs, ex-chiefs of staff, who ran against Mr. Bibi now and scored a very, very fine result, they were very careful, A, not to say that they are left. It's a bad word in Israeli politics after Oslo. B, they were very careful not to say that they support a Palestinian state in the foreseeable future.
Your critics, and Netanyahu's critics, Ahud, they'd say that Israel is on a trajectory to become an apartheid state, a bit like the former South Africa. Palestinians will eventually be a majority, but without the rights of citizens. This is Jonathan Friedland in The Guardian. He says that Netanyahu's re-election heralds the further undermining of the rule of law, including threats to the occupied West Bank. How would you respond to those concerns?
It's not the first time that I disagree entirely with whatever Mr. Friedman is writing. But Israel is not going to move to annex the West Bank and to assume that the only solution that we have in sight is a one state in which the Palestinians will not be granted equal rights is simply out of sync with what Israel is. That same Israel that voted Bibi back in office. You have a solid 85% majority for a two-state solution. Of course, once the Palestinians are ready, finally, to go for a deal. You have a solid 80-85% majority against annexation of even parts of the West Bank, etc., etc., etc. The fact that we are not going to have a deal tomorrow, the fact that it may not be Mr. Netanyahu's first priority now, does not mean that we are down this slippery slope of going to a one state. That's something which is not going to happen, knowing my country for what it is.
Ehud, thanks so much for being on Radio National today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
That was Ehud Yari from the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and author of 8 books on the Arab-Israeli conflict. You're on RN.